Welcome to Star Party, an astrology and tarot podcast that serves up both soulful evolution and bedazzled celebration. I'm astrologer and hypnotist Sandy Citron.
And I'm astrologer and tarot reader Bess Matassa. We're so glad you're here. Let's get the party started.
Welcome, Star Party listeners. It's me, Sandy, and I'm here with Bess Matassa, of course. And we are so excited to let the sun shine in through the cracks in the windows and talk to you about our Leo season topic, which is, drumroll please, Bess.
I'm really bad at creating a drum roll, apparently.
Me too. Well, we'll know that
I'll
for the features.
Purr. I'll do a purr.
Like, ooh, a purr. Purr. I'm bad at that one too. So our theme is presence. Presence. A very...
Just pressing our little paw prints against the window.
Yeah, as the car drives by. So, Bess, what are you thinking about for this topic, presence?
Oh, well, Sandy, I went on a bit of a ride with this one, as I sometimes do. And I feel like when I started to dip in, I was kind of flooded with some sensations that I had to then interrogate a little bit more deeply, because I think on some level, and we all have these parts of ourselves that we sort of like hold as our prized possessions, like these qualities that we perceive that we have. And I feel like I've always considered myself a very like hyper-present person. And in my mind, I've always sort of associated that maybe with fieriness. And I think we've talked on past episodes before about sort of the temporal component of different element energies and different modality energies. And I can't remember what episode it was when we spoke about fire energy as like the nowness and water energy as sort of, you know, a pull maybe into a return or a past, and air maybe as futuristic. And so I started kind of there. But then when I really started to unpack that, I realized that, especially in my younger life, the kind of presence that I was showing up in was maybe more about a kind of immediacy that was sometimes like a little bit self-serving rather than a kind of immersive participation, which is where I then started to get led with this topic. Like, what's the difference between presence as an immediate kind of action or a spontaneous action or a spontaneous generation versus a kind of responsive presence that might help us become more available to settle into a moment? And so, yeah, I sort of like bopped around through my history of like associating that kind of presence with almost, I was thinking about, I've been working on a project with this incredible author and thinker and poet, Cara Thomas. And in one of her pieces, I can't remember which one, but that we've been working through, she has this beautiful phrase where she says something along the lines of like, when do you use the moment to leave the moment? And I've been realizing in my own history that I've done that quite a bit. It's sort of like getting off on the nowness of something, or like making a spontaneous move, and it actually moves you away from the move or the moment, where you're kind of like almost you're using the moment rather than sort of responding to the moment. So that's sort of like the first place that I started to explore. And then the second was like the idea of presence as a value. I think we have this idea, you know, maybe in the wellness or sort of spiritual world, that to be present is something like we really, really want. And that's of like high octave value and expression in our spiritual journey. Like if we can just become present, like, you know, there is no past, there is no future, availability to the now. But I started to think about how that can be true, but that there's also a really strong value of absence, like that we have. Like sometimes we need to absent ourselves. Sometimes we need to know how to remove, not remove from like in denial or away from the moment in a way that feels, you know, that feels regressive in any way, but just like, what is the relationship between presence and absence? And then I went down this whole rabbit hole, and this is the last thing that I'll say, but this whole kind of rabbit hole connected to the relationship between absence and presence. And not to take us down like a garbage chute of my former life as an academic, but when I was an academic, I was an urban geographer, and my main topic of research for a while was the idea of memory in urban landscapes and how people relate to history and memory through through architecture and through the built environment. And one of the studies I was doing was basically around partially present structures in the environment, like buildings that were in some state of disrepair, decay, you know, kind of ruination, composting themselves, and how people used like those environments to make sense of history and memory. And what I found, and there was a lot of problems with this research and whatever, we don't need to get into it, but one of the things that I found was that people were able to bring more of their stories to the built environment when there was less there, like when there was less over-explained or when there was less like physically present sometimes. So that gaps in the physical landscape actually helped people insert their own, you know, ruminations and imaginations about what might have been or how they might fit into the story of the city, all this kind of stuff. So I started thinking about, vis-a-vis this topic, like what it means to bring our presence to perceived emptiness and to bring our presence to absence, and how like really intensely courageous of an act that can be. Like, what does it mean actually to like show up and shine on? And it feels like a very high octave expression of the energy of Leo, even when there's a void, you know, even to emptiness. And so I started to bop around through just like this large notion of like, what does it mean to bring ourselves to the empty parts of our chart, to the places in ourselves that we may have forsaken, and to show ourselves there and to kind of show up there? So I'll leave it. Oh, I'll leave it at that.
Yes. So. Wow. We could just talk about everything you just said for probably 2 hours. It's fascinating. Oh, so rich. Now I'm just thinking about like writing a little autobiography of each of the empty houses in my chart.
Oof.
Like making a little pop-up book.
Yes, autobiographies of emptiness.
That would be fun. Wow. Oh, so awesome. Yeah, I think I was like taking, you know, a kind of sideways approach to where you were as well, where my big themes that I kind of pulled out from this word, there were two prongs, and I think they're really similar to what you were just talking about, especially the first thing you were talking about. But the one prong is the idea of mindfulness, kind of similar to what you're talking about, this value of presence that we have. It's like, were you present? Am I present? How do I be more present? And this idea of mindfulness and of being like able to really pay attention to what the moment is showing and offering and to really be still, kind of, and how that, you know, it is a value. I like that you use the word value. And it's also a place where when we can be in that space, some of the worry and anxiety or regret might kind of fall away. So there's that I want to dig into. And then the other thing I kept thinking about with this presence idea is like, just when I was growing up, someone in my life used to always say like, oh, she's got great presence, or oh, he's got great presence. And this idea, it was usually an actor or a person, and how it became such a, for me, this thing of like, how do you have presence? Like, who has presence and who doesn't? And like, who also, who decides? You know, this is really in the eye of the beholder. But when I was growing up, it was kind of this idea that was like, you either had it or you don't, you know? And like, if you have it, you have it. And I've met a lot of actors having, like famous celebrities having worked in restaurants in New York a long time. So I'd always be watching them and be like, do they have presence? You know, are they famous? Like, are they, like, what do they have? Do they have this charisma that everyone's talking about? Or what is this? So before, you know, as part of my research, I looked up the word presence, and it says, one of the definitions, there's many definitions of the word presence, but one of the definitions is the immediate proximity of a person or thing. So that's kind of this idea. It's present with you. Personal appearance or bearing, especially of a dignified nature, an imposing or dignified personality. And I was like, whoa, imposing or dignified. I kind of thought it was more of a charisma thing, that you would have this power. But it's like, you know, maybe it's like the person who kind of has control in some way. Or like this person who ends up like, it is very Leo to think of this, you know, lion, the king of the jungle or whatever, you know, and the Lion King like standing on the cliff and like taking up all the space and everyone's looking up at the lion and be like, wow. I also looked up charisma because I felt like they were similar words, but I think I'm actually wrong about that. But the definition of charisma, one of them is a divinely conferred power or talent. So this idea that like God gave some kind of power or talent. And then if you're like looping that into the presence idea, it's like, and that makes you this special imposing kind of dignified person. There's a lot about like the royalty or the celebrity and how you hold that up. So I'm kind of like working with those two different prongs where it's like, okay, on the one hand, it's like, who has this presence or who has this thing? And so I asked my inner higher self or inner guidance about that. And the information that came back was like, we all have a certain power and it has nothing to do with how other people receive us. Like, which is a really interesting, you know, when you think about like me growing up being like, oh, she has presence or he has presence. They just have it. And it's like, no, we all have it. And it actually has zero to do with like who the audience is or who's like looking around and saying, do they have it or do they not have it? So there was a sense of like this kind of like power emanating from your own hands. And maybe the moment when you have that power is the moment when you're really in this like super present state of mindfulness. Maybe that's something where it's like the more like centered you are in the moment or the more centered you are in yourself or in your self-worth, maybe then that power is kind of welling up. I don't know, because God only knows I'm very rarely ever centered in the moment.
And I'm using the moment to jack off on the moment. So,
yeah. But no. We all do that too. Like, you know, I was just before the call, I was talking to you about how I'm like, you know, encouraging my 6-month-old to feed herself. And like, it takes a long time. You sit there and it's really fun and funny to watch her. And she's like got, you know, an apple and she's jamming it into her eye. And like, you know, but it's like the whole idea with it is to really sit and wait and like also eat yourself, you know, eat your own meal and like, you know, be present with her, eat yourself, eat your own meal and like be present with her as she eats her meal. But it takes like way longer than a normal meal. And it's like, oh yeah, this is what we're doing. Like, I can't like be like, oh, I gave you a piece of apple. Now I'm taking it away. And now we're going on to the next thing.
Right.
You know, I have to be present and be really attentive. So you don't choke on some chunk of apple or whatnot. So yeah, a lot. We have a lot to talk about. We better get started. Yeah, I mean, I guess we already have.
We're in it. We're here.
Yeah.
I love how you're bringing forward this idea of like presence as this this monumentality of like the filling of the room. Because, and we were speaking about the relationship with God. I was thinking, and it's probably. It's probably Liz Green. Whenever I'm like, I wonder where this thought came from, then I'm, you know, it's probably Liz Green because I'm like a Liz Green junkie. But I feel like there's something that she writes about this idea that we have about leonine energy being about the self and the other. And that's really not, I don't want to say that it's not true, but it's not the highest octave expression of what that energy wants to do, because ultimately the relationship between, it's not between Leo as self and the other or the audience or the, you know, the receptors. It's actually between Leo and God. And once that kind of relationship is solidified, it's almost immaterial, like what the reception is. And I was thinking, and it's kind of like a seg into my snack, I think too, but when you were talking about that idea of presence, like somebody having presence, you know, I was thinking about almost like the pour that we have of our personhood into a room, and that there's a kind of stillness or a still point in the self that I think grows that kind of ambiance that we create when we're sort of steeped in ourselves in that way. And then we just walk into a room like beholden to no one but ourselves and sort of reflecting internally, self on self. Then we kind of show up and we can affect change without saying a word, without doing an action. We just change the texture and the ambiance of the room. And everybody has the capacity to step into a space and to fill it in that way in their own flavor. And so I love what you're you're talking about in terms of like these great presences and the presence of self. It's really cool.
Fill the room with your flavor.
Fill the room with your flavor. Oh, God. Let's get snacking. So my snack, without further ado, I feel like I'm back around to a snack that is near and dear to my heart, and it's the Fixed Signs. So I was really thinking, and not to say that, you know, cardinal, fixed, mutable, there's one singular way of generating energy in any of these modalities. But I was really kind of struck when I was feeling into this topic about the energetic movement of cardinal and mutable energy. They kind of like push off or they dissolve away, you know, respectively. And then what happens in fixed, like these are really the heavy pores of the zodiac. And not to say that this makes them inherently, you know, if you have a lot of fixed energy in your chart, you're somehow like more wired to be more present, you know, than another being. But I think of these signs really as maybe closer to the latter definition that you were bringing forward, Sandy, in terms of like having strong presence or helping us cultivate the strength of presence, being really strong space holders. And really being kind of fillers of not that there isn't movement in these signs, because obviously there is, but we are at the most steeped and saturated point when we hit each of these four, you know, being Taurus, Leo, Scorpio, and Aquarius. And I think there's something really to investigate about how we relate to each of those signs' energies in our charts. And there's lots of ways that you can play with this. You know, you could start by looking at planets placed in those signs. If you don't have that, you can look obviously like at their rulers and maybe enter through the gateway of Venus or the Sun or Pluto or Uranus. You know, looking at the houses that are naturally kind of connected to these, you know, being 2, 5, 8, and 11, or looking at where you have those signs on a particular house cusp. But I really, I was just really kind of like investigating the idea of how each of these fixed energies, like there's a certain continuity and a certain like juice concentration to their energy. They're really wholly steeped in their own essence. And so there's a certain durability about that, that I think allows for a kind of eternal like returning to the moment, because there is like a very strong through thread in each of these signs' energies. And also they're sort of, they've got a certain magnetism to each of them. Like there's a kind of magnetic quality that I think really speaks to that latter component of presence as like entering the room and feeling, you know, that kind of reciprocity between you and your shift in the ambience of the environment, and then folding the world kind of folding back to meet you. And I think this is a very imperfect, you know, like whatever Inuit way of dealing with this. But I was kind of like partnering each of these pairs of signs together around a certain kind of presence. And so I was looking at Taurus and Leo as a pair. And then I was looking at Scorpio and Aquarius as a pair. And of course, like, you know, we might think of the more obvious pairs along the polarity being Taurus and Scorpio and Leo and Aquarius. But for the purpose of this idea, I was looking at Taurus and Leo as fixed energies that really close the gaps, that fill up and come closer to life. If we look about, you know, look at Taurus energy, this is an energy that's sort of anti-scarcity. It's that kind of blooming buffet energy. And so we fill hunger in Taurus. We close the gap. And for me, presence has something to do with coming closer and kind of like closing the gap between ourselves and what we perceive to be, you know, absence or perceived to be not us, that we're kind of seamlessly moving into the moment. And Leo closes this gap through this kind of pulsation of fiery selfhood that really doesn't see anything as apart from the self. Like it's all sort of fuel. And Taurus similarly, you know, if we look at Taurus as almost like edibilizing the world or making everything into potential flower food, like, and then we look at, you know, Leo and everything is potentially kind of like stoking the flame or continuing their, well, it has to, you know, because Leo has to continue as sort of imbued with the essence of the sun, which has to not burn out, you know, on some level has to be consistent. And so I was really looking at those two as like gap closers and coming closer to the moment or coming closer into presence in that way. That's almost like, you know, humidifying the environment where we come closer to the air. And I know I talk about that a lot connected to Leo, but seeing those two a little bit together on that tip. And then I was thinking about Scorpio and Aquarius as creating absence in some ways, and then bringing presence to the absence. So both of these signs to me, Scorpio and Aquarius, are sort of linked through the creation of space, you know, and Scorpio knows how to sort of sweep when there's a moment that's needed to overturn or a moment to re-neutrify in a different way. And so there's a kind of exorcism or excision that happens in Scorpio. And then with Aquarius, we've got to get wider. We've got to clear out. We've got to amplify to a certain degree. So both of these are sort of sweeps that then create an absence or create a gap or create a breathable, you know, blankness that then can re-presence itself, like repower itself by showing up again. If we look at Scorpio, you know, all of these kinds of like phoenix overturns and returns and returning to life and the courage of that, you know, all of these fixed signs. I mean, not to say that every sign in the zodiac isn't courageous, but we look at these fixed signs to come back again or to continue on really in the flavor, in sort of fixed flavor, is a really courageous act. And Scorpio is like, I'm going to love again. I'm going to live again. I'm going to, you know, we're going to do this again. And I'm going to, you know, despite what I know about absence, despite what I know about loss. And Aquarius, you know, similarly, and, you know, creating this really wide and ample room to bring any kind of presence to the moment. It's like we think about Aquarius connected to like the biodiversity of being, to all of these different ways in which people can show up to meet the moment. And Aquarius is, you know, beautiful non-judgment and acceptance around that. And so creating a wide enough playing field for every flavor of presence to enter the room and to fill it. So that's where I landed, and we can ruminate, we can steep ourselves. But
so earlier you mentioned an episode, which we'll have to look and see which one it was, but where we were talking about water element maybe being kind of like the past, and the air element being like the future, and the fire element being like the present. And I think we also included the earth element as like the present. So it's really interesting to hear this where it's like, okay, the earth sign Taurus and the fire sign Leo are in this like closest to the present. And then Scorpio, the water sign, and Aquarius, the air sign, are in the kind of like past of the future almost, where they're like separated from the present, but that they're kind of like, I love the way you posit that they're allowing you then to like kind of clear out and then like almost like replant yourself, you know, and through this, almost if we think about it through like, you know, dealing with your past, letting go, dealing with all the future trains and all the future possibilities, and then circling back to the now and like taking all those new ideas of the future and bringing them into the moment. It's kind of an interesting. I just love what you're talking about here. It's really cool. So fascinating.
Yeah, I wonder too, and maybe this is, maybe I'm going down a hole that I'm not going to be able to adequately explain, but I wonder
too. So that'll be you just being really present.
I've been wondering over the course of this conversation thus far, like what does it mean to consider presence from a point of view that's not time-based? And I know that sounds like a crazy mindfuck in this moment, because it's like, but if we take ourselves out of like linear time for a moment, like what would it mean to evaluate presence from that perspective? And maybe the idea of looking at each of the elements through this lens helps us do that, because we realize that there's no element that's necessarily more, like we might think about fire as one form of presence, but that might be time-based. That might be about taking a spontaneous gesture in what we perceive to be the now and kind of refusing to consider or not considering in that moment the past or the future. But I don't know. I'm just going to like leave that hanging in the air, because I don't know what to fully do with it. But I think that there's a way, maybe when we become really hyper-present, like that's what happens. Like there isn't linear time dissolves. It's not, you know, it's no longer a temporal concern, really. Like,
That's what I've been thinking about without really having the best words to describe it. But it's, you know, I can get hyper-focused and really in the moment. And usually I'm doing something creative when that happens. That was something I really want to talk about in my snack, is this idea of creativity and presence. And like when you're making something or you're really invested in creating something, there that time kind of can fade away. And then you're really present. But then there's another part of me that wonders, or are you really not present? <You know>? Like, it feels as if you're really present, but also could it possibly be that you're like, you've like left?
Yeah. Well, and that's, I think, what I was trying to get into with like using the moment to leave the moment. Because I know like in my own creative process, and it's something I'm really interrogating deeply now, like around Leo energy specifically, like, what does it mean like for me to just be like feeling myself and like off in some fucking flow that nobody cares about, you know, versus being like really responsive and present with the use of creative force to meet what is meeting me, you know?
Right. Is it the attention that you're paying in that moment to something that's an internal or external? Maybe is another way to think about it. Like, are you paying attention to the way the wind feels or your baby smashing yogurt on her face or whatever? Or are you paying attention to this internal thing that's welling up inside of you? And then maybe in that moment, you're like less responsive to the moment.
And maybe like the ultimate expression of presence is the meeting of those worlds or the divining of like how we sit at the intersection of that, like how we're both internally present and externally present, like simultaneously. And I don't know, that's making me think a little bit about the elements allied in a different formation, where I think often of fire and water is very internally generative, or maybe there's an internal presence, you know, vis-a-vis earth and air is maybe a little bit more responsive to sort of structural, you know, externality. I don't know. I think that there's different ways to sort of like, I don't know, I guess the bottom line is that we need all four elements in order. And maybe there's something about that, the alchemy. And it's making me, it's sort of skipping me ahead to like Virgo energy, which of course is our next on the wheel of the year. And the idea of alchemy, the idea of like divining this precise sort of like proprietary blend of, you know, of goodies to kind of match a moment. But it's making me think that it might be an interesting experiment too, to notice like when you're in need of presence or when you're wanting to bring your presence to a situation, like what the elemental cocktail is within you at this moment, and like how to, I don't want to say create like balance, because I think balance is a little bit of a, you know, it's a little bit of a red herring sometimes, because it's going to look different for each of us. But like, what would it mean to create a blend of all four elements to meet a moment, you know, or to check in with each of those four as you sort of travel the world and enter the now? I don't know.
Yeah. Wow. Just got this like picture in my mind of like an imaginary chart where someone has a grand cross in the fixed element, like the grand cross being like that big square, the red square with those four fixed signs. And like, does that person then have the capability to have more presence in a way, or do they get more stuck? Like, or probably both. Like, is that another feature of this? Like, can you just get kind of stuck and like, I don't know. I don't know where this is going.
Yeah. But. Well, when you're talking about stuck, I'm kind of like thinking, and again, this might be like too esoteric of an exploration, but like when we're thinking about a certain form of presence, and then we said something about like using the moment to leave the moment. So like getting off and sort of going elsewhere. I think there's another form of maybe hyper presence or presence gone wild, where we don't use it to go elsewhere. We use it to go so deep into something that we're then like lost below the ground. I think we can get lost by either popping out and away and like getting off, or getting so far in that we're like absorbed and we're like, where's Sandy? She's gone. Assimilated.
Totally. She's in a rut.
Yeah. She's just been composted so far into fixed sign energy that she's gone.
My worst nightmare. Being in a rut.
Being in a rut. Really? Let's talk about that.
I don't know. Like, maybe it's the Mercury in Scorpio. I've been in many a rut. But like, it's so, I have such an anathema. Is that a word? I have so such, I'm so against it that it like, I, you know, will then change the wrong thing. Be like, I'll like hit the eject button. It might be Mercury and Scorpio in the 11th house.
Oh, yeah. Like the eject button. Like, oh.
You know, like, got to get this like new direction, this new future thing. I hit the eject button, but then I'm like, wait, why did I hit the eject button on that thing? That was kind of good. Mm. Anyway, enough about me. We're not doing Sandy and Best therapy, are we?
We actually are, because we say that we're not doing it every time, but we actually are.
We always are.
It's making me think with your Scorpio energy, and it's sort of like doubling down in the 11th house with the Aquarius overlay, you know, that it could be interesting too to see, not that this is just a dualistic exploration, but like, what's sort of your natural proclivity, like listeners, like in your chart? Are you more sort of on the Leo Taurus tip of like filling up and like coming closer? Mm. Or are you more in the tip of like creating presence or returning into presence through a little bit of absenting or through a little bit of clearing? You know, and each of us might have like a particular cocktail around that. I know for me, like, I'm much more on the other tip, like where you might be in the Scorpio Aquarius zone. I think I trend very Leo. So I trend to like, I'm so close sometimes that I can't even see what I'm seeing because my little nose is just like pressed up against the, you know, it's like almost a hyper. And so clearings or spaces of absention in order to return can be quite activating for me because I'm like, I've just got to be there. I got to keep my hands on it. Like, nobody move, nothing move. We got to just keep it hot, you know, and exploring that in yourself and seeing what that rhythm looks like for you at this point in your life.
Maybe that's why I love Leos so much. Like, I just, everyone in my life has some strong Leo because I'm like, you're so close to the fire. And I just keep like catapulting away from it.
But we need you or our little fur is going to just burn up. We're going to be singed.
Oh no.
It's going to be smoked kitten for supper.
Oh no. I don't like that.
No, sorry. Strike that from the
I don't like that.
No, you gotta keep us. You gotta keep us cool.
Oh, I will. Don't worry.
Yeah. All right.
Okay. So yeah. So I don't know how to loop in where I'm at, but let's see if I can remember a thread or two. So I'm gonna share my snack in a minute, but first I'm gonna kind of set us up because I was really thinking about creativity and this idea of like, when you're creating, are you more present, you know? And when I went to art school and I have a whole history of being a painter and I have made many a painting and much of the time I started out in high school and my first foray into painting has been super present. Like I loved painting because I went away. Like I went so far in, I went out, you know, I used the moment to leave the moment. And I loved that feeling of like just being so close to the attention I was paying. Usually I was doing figurative painting. So looking and responding and like just being in such a creative high from it. And then I went to art school and I got like really in my head about a lot of it. And that's fine. No regrets. But I started to get more and more unhappy doing it, where I would get like so in my head with every mark, you know, every mark I made was weighed against the board or the critique or like, you know, the whole canon of art making, or like, you know, how does this mark fit into all art ever made ever? And I started to become so dissatisfied with this thing that just felt really self-serving of like, now I'm making stuff and I'm in my head and like, I don't know if it's good or bad. I have zero clue. It was so far away from where I had been so present in the creative making of it. I got so far into my head that it was no longer fun most of the time. And it was also like, you know, I just didn't feel present. And I'm thinking about Leo the way I usually talk about Leo, although, you know, he shared so much interesting stuff about maybe I'll change, you know, maybe I'll come up with something new now. But I usually think about Leo as this like responsive sign, this like fire sign that's interpersonal. And to me, what that means is fire is the spirit, the spark of life. And Leo takes that spirit, spark of life, and really responds to another person with it. And I liked how you were bringing in Liz Green and like this idea of like Leo responding to God. So that's a whole new twist. But we'll just stick with my like typical description of like Leo responding to another person with this spark of life. And so to me, what that means is like Leo goes inside and finds the spark of themselves, their soul, their spirit. And then they figure out some way to share that spirit, that spark with another person. So I always call that like photocopying a part of your soul and like holding it out and saying like, do you see what I am? Do you see what I, and one of the ways to do that is through a creative process of some kind, making a meal, you know, or making a perfume or making a painting or, you know, doing a little song. Doing a little song. And like, there's this like, in turn, or playing, you know, kids do this by playing. But like finding like, this is me. And here, do you see me? And I'm sharing me with you. And so that creative act, I think when you really get into the spark of the flame of the hearth fire that is Leo, and you take a little flame out and you hold it out, there's such a deep presence that's possible when you're really in that. Now, I was also thinking about like this idea of presence being so Leo. Maybe that's another train leaving the station. I'll come back to that later. But really, I want to stick with this creativity idea, this like sense of like, hey, I'm shining out, I'm sharing. And then earlier, I was talking about mindfulness and that kind of way of thinking about presence, which is like, I'm really able to be just here and I'm able to just like sift through what's in my environment and like still maintain like my own connection to myself or, you know, mindfulness may just be like, I'm able to let go of everything that I need or want or think, and I'm able to just be. And so taking this kind of idea of mindfulness, which we'll talk about more, and then this idea of creativity, my snack is the IC and the MC. Where like the MC being the creative arm, where you're like shining out, or you're taking up that space, you have that presence, you know, you have that kind of charisma, that like that thing that's happening inside of you, where you're really just sharing your spark with the world, and then it's shining out, and that's the 10th house, so that's the space of like all of a sudden the eyes are turning toward you, and they're saying like, oh, you know, there's that give and take between the sharing and then the receiving. And then the IC, I was, you know, I feel like at least in my path in life, and I know there's a million different ways to like be mindful and be in the moment, and there's no, you know, right way or wrong way. But for me, I've had to do a lot of emotional work in order to get like to be able to sit still, you know, and I'm still always doing that. That never ends. You know, I did this like Vipassana meditation, I think 2 years ago or 3 years ago. And it was wild. Like I thought I'd done all this emotional work and I was like, you know, in this like silent 10-day meditation retreat, like walking through the forest, like high kicking trees because I was so angry. Like all these feelings were coming up. I was like losing my mind.
High kicking trees. I've got to incorporate that phrase.
I was having these intense emotions coming up that just had to express. And I was like, oh my God. I went into like a huge, like totally illogical and bizarre, like 2 hour long paranoia that the Queen of England was going to die. Like I don't even know what was like, I was losing it. But anyway, I do think that like the IC is kind of a space of your emotional base or your emotional security. And that like when you're working with the IC, you're working with like these kind of emotions that are welling up in the moment and then letting them go. It's, you know, cardinal. It's the IC is associated with the sign of Cancer. So there's like this cardinal initiative emotional space where an emotion comes up and then it ebbs away, and an emotion comes up and you embody it and it ebbs away. And mindfulness, maybe there's a path toward mindfulness where you're letting these emotions kind of well up. You're looking at them and you're watching them ebb away, and then a new one kind of arises and you're watching it. That act of watching, of being like present in the room with the emotion but not reacting to it, is a way of really staying present in the moment. So this is like where I'm at. So it'd be interesting to, I don't know how you would play with the IC and the MC in your own chart. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe looking at the planet that rules those space, those angles, and kind of thinking about the character of that planet and what it has to do with you. Any thoughts about yours?
Oh my God. Well, Sandy, as usual, you're blowing my effing mind and I'm going on a deep journey. and maybe this is how our snacks are colliding, sort of naturally colliding, because on my IC is Aquarius, on my midheaven, of course, are all my Leo jazzies, including my moon and the North Node and all that stuff. And I'm thinking about my own, like, I love what you're speaking about in terms of the creative process, because I'm thinking about, for me, like how much of a learning it's been around the rhythm of creating or letting absence, letting that kind of Aquarian clearing happen on an internal level in order to show back up again, like that it's not about having to maintain the high. Like so much of my life, and this is not just in my creative pursuits, it comes out, of course, in all areas of life, you know, with substance and romantic stuff and relationship, whatever, that so much of like the wiring that I've, you know, been called to interrogate or explore has been around like my chasing the high, which I've always associated with like a lot of strong energy, Leo energy, because there's almost this kind of roller coaster of Leo where it's about like the recreation of some special moment or some, you know, moment where everything was like aligned and dazzling and sparkling. And I think in a lot of ways that's been my challenge with presence, because I'm trying to like get the hit off of presence sometimes. I'm trying to be like, you know, but it like leaves the moment. And so like a great learning for me has been around like, what does it mean to actually learn how to cycle into periods of shade or periods of like absence or the clearing, which is both symbolized by Aquarius on my IC and symbolized more, you know, on a broader level by the IC, like this idea of the shade, like the shade in the sun, or the kind of, you know. And I've been exploring, coming off of Cancer season two, I've been doing a lot of explorations around Cancer and Capricorn and this kind of like claim to bodily belonging or claim to belonging that each of them stake, and that sort of internal shade-based, you know, shelter of Cancer, and then this larger sort of apparatus around around Capricorn. But I was writing recently about the IC, and I was writing about the idea that on one level, this area in the chart is sort of like, you know, can describe like conditions of birthing, you know, conditions of coming up and being conceived in the world, that early environment that we walked through. But that ultimately maybe the ask around the AC is to like immaculately reconceive of ourselves, to create that as like our own nativity scene, for like repurposing our own birth. So like you're blowing my fucking mind right now thinking about that in the creative process, because so much of the creative process is about like taking charge. And I don't mean this like in a willpower or egoic way, but like being in charge of our own birthing process and our own kind of like how things gestate within us, how we receive inspiration, how we incubate it, and then how we launch it out into the MC of the world. And so there's something, I don't know, I feel like there's a lot of deep work on the IC around the reconceiving of ourselves, like vis-a-vis the creative process, which again, I think really returns us to the moment, because so much that we associate with the IC is about lineage maybe, or about inheritance and repurposing that for our own kind of the immediacy of our own birthing in the now through creative work of all kinds is really interesting. I don't know.
Oh yeah. Wow. Now I'm going on a little journey too, because I'm thinking about, I have Aries and Libra, Mars and Venus Aries on the IC and Libra on the MC. And I'm thinking about how this, like with the creative process, especially like with the emotions coming up, this like Aries, you know, I think sometimes I think of an emotion coming up within me as like there's suddenly something to do or it like compels me, like, you know, it doesn't just happen, I embody it, it's like okay, now what do I do? And we could talk more about that, I'm sure. But
Cardinal Moon kid.
Yeah. Yeah. And this Libra on the MC, I'm suddenly thinking about how in my creative process, like what if everything I made was and is a partnership? Like, and you know, right now we're making a podcast and I, you know, have you as my channel, my muse.
Mutual musing.
And I love it to be able to talk and discuss and then this like created thing appears. It's incredible. And a lot of times when I'm making something, and I want to bring this into my painting and circle back to painting, but when I'm making, writing horoscopes, I do a meditation where I invite in like the listener and I ask, you know, what do you need to hear? And that's my way of being able to make, is to like say like, okay, who's on the other end of this? And like, where is this going? It'd be really interesting to try to do that with my painting practice when I start painting again. Whenever that will be. Wow. So much here.
Really? Well, yeah. This is some tarot snack time. This one in many ways is a continuation of my astro snack because the thing that came forward for the tarot is the fives of the tarot. And I don't know, I don't think we've touched on the fives in any of the past podcasts. Maybe we have, but I feel like the fives are sort of like those cards. I always imagine, I'm sure I've talked about on the podcast before, because I'm obsessed with like Pee-wee's Big Adventure, that movie from the 80s, where, you know, when he saves the pet store, like the burning pet store, and he's like clearing out all the animals one by one, and he like keeps going in, and like the snakes are like the last to go out because he like doesn't want to touch them. But like eventually he has to save the snakes. You know, he gets all the puppies out, all like the little chicks, and he goes in for the snakes and he like passes out in the street. He's holding the snakes. Anyway, I kind of think of that associated with the fives in the tarot, because sometimes it feels like maybe they're the cards in the minor arcana, at least, that people feel like, hey, I don't want to quite touch those, or that's somehow, you know, activating. And, you know, I'm not here to like, just like wash them in positive, you know, light. I think everything is textural, and, who knows, you may love the fives, but, the fives came forward and I thought it was interesting, because they are astrologically, if we look at the minor arcana and in terms of sort of like trinities of cards, like the 2, 3, 4 in every suit are associated with cardinal energy, and the 5, 6, 7 with fixed, and then the 8, 9, 10 with mutable. And so the fives are part of the fixed sign sort of camp. So each of the fives and their respective elements link us back to one of those fixed signs that we've already talked about, you know, Taurus, Leo, Scorpio, and Aquarius. And, you know, I just sort of played with those. And again, you can obviously do a poll or you can intention set around this, you know, what each of those fives energy looks like in this conversation of like the dance of presence and absence and, you know, representing ourselves to absence. And so looking at the first five, the five of pentacles, I'll just cycle through them in the order of the fixed signs that we talked about. The five of pentacles is connected to the sign of Taurus. And, you know, you'll often see traditional, you know, representations of this card as somehow connected to a wanting, to a hunger, you know, figures outside a church and, you know, they're out in the cold in the Rider-Waite-Smith and they're, you know, if they just turned their bodies and looked in this window, they could find this, you know, this warm space in this interior where there was a filling. And so this card really looking at how both we like kind of grapple with the hungers in us, with the hungry moments and those sort of perceived holes, and how we sustain, like, and how we kind of turn to present ourselves with some sort of sustenance in that moment. And so like what that dance looks like in terms of almost the infill aspect of presence and being able to present ourselves with nourishment or nutrition on a soul level in a given moment when we encounter what we perceive as a hole or a gap, a hungry hole, a hungry hippo hole. And then the five of wands is kind of a funny one because the five of wands, you know, connected wands energy connected to Leo. And we see this card a lot. Like I used to teach this card as like doing cartwheels in a small room, or like this feeling of like kind of slight creative constriction sometimes, or just sort of banging around in your own creative process. And it's interesting, like thinking about it now, like with what you're bringing forward, Sandy, about creativity and into this conversation. But The Five of Wands almost feels like the willingness we have to be with like all of these textures of self in a given moment. And I don't know if we always think about Leo this way, because in some ways, sometimes we get Leo into this like rarefied light where Leo, like, you know, maybe we don't think about it in the fray as much of a range of selfhood, because we think about it as kind of like rarefied, or Leo is able to like, you know, take the best of self or whatever, or the perception of the best of self, and lift it out. But there is some, I think, reckoning with the range of humanness that has to happen in Leo for it to like resolarize even the bits that might be, you know, excised, or, you know, like to rewarm the entirety of the self. And I think this is another aspect of fixed sign energy that maybe bears entry into the conversation around presence, because I think all the fixed signs, one of the things that they're really good at, or sort of wired for, is an incorporation or an assimilation, an absorption of a full range of human expression. Like everything gets included with fixed. Like it's almost like there's nothing left out. Even if we talk about Scorpio, obviously, and Aquarius as clearing energies, ultimately the engine of clearing is also about the invitation of space for a range of self-expression. So thinking about maybe the Five of Wands as kind of an all of it, you know, an all of it invitation of sort of banging around in all of these aspects of self. And then the Five of Cups connected to Scorpio, you know, this is the card where we see a depiction of a couple of cups, you know, tipped over or emptied. And then there's usually three. It's usually the ratio is like two are empty and then three are full, but they're sort of behind the figure in the card. So they can't quite see yet that there's going to be a presence that's going to enter, you know, the life. They're with the loss in this moment. And thinking about what do we do in those moments where it appears that absence, like that there's nothing left for us. And also like what does it mean for there to be, like, if we think about the cups connected to the emotional realm, you know, emotional patterning. And we've all had experiences where we kind of go in for more nutrition from a certain emotional pattern that already is bankrupt or bereft of nutrition at this point. And we try to like suckle out a little something from that scenario, but it just sort of keeps giving us its absence. And like, how do we handle that? And how do we kind of handle that space of absence, like of emotional absence, when we continue maybe to reach for something and it's just not there? And also, I think there's work in this card. You know, a lot of people talk about this card as like grief work. And I don't know that we need to necessarily always sync up with like something. I feel like the word grief and the concept grief has like, you know, sometimes dramatic connotations, but like the little absences in ourselves, the little sort of empty places, the empty cups in ourselves in a given moment, and like tending all those little clearings or those little things that aren't there, you know, whether it's a big grief, or whether it's something as like simple as, oh, I used to be in this way in this scenario and now I'm not, you know, and how do I honor the departure of that, you know, which is part of Scorpio energy, I think, writ large, the honoring of departure. And then lastly, the Five of Swords, and this is the card that's connected to Aquarius. And the idea, I think, in this card is sometimes that we get sort of caught up in, again, similar maybe to Five of Cups, like going in for a mental hit, you know, with something that's sort of like part of our greatest hits of mental circuitry that we know doesn't really power us or creates more of an absence. It's kind of like this reaching for, okay, here we go again with this storyline or with this scenario, and I know where this is going to lead, but I'm just sort of wired chemically in this moment to go in and try to get the hit, and then we don't. And then we end up feeling, you know, whatever which way about that. And, you know, on the surface, I feel like sometimes there's a little curiosity around what the relationship is between Aquarius energy and that kind of cycle. But I think the ultimate gift of this card, again, is like dealing with the absence, dealing with like what it is to sit in the space before we like reach for the hit that we know isn't really going to fill, and kind of explore that. And thinking about both, I think, Scorpio and Aquarius, like primarily the cups and the swords, as almost like patterns of possession that we're sort of breaking ranks with. I do think of all of the fixed sign energies as like connected to the idea of possession in some way. And we can think about that as possession of resources. We can think about that as a holding or a holding pattern. We can think about that in your way of bringing forward presence, Sandy, around like self-possession or being self-possessed in a certain moment. And I think in the cups and the swords, there is this kind of like an invitation around a sort of breaking ranks or a temporary interruption with the things that possess us externally that aren't necessarily nutrifying in order to repossess ourselves or to feel more self-possessed. And maybe this is the ultimate gift of all four of these cards, is the idea of self-possession, which I think is somehow connected to presence in my mind. So absolutely. Go nuts, pull some cards. Yeah. And
that's beautiful.
Yeah.
Yeah. Self-possession and self-confidence kind of, right? Like that you've built up over time, such an understanding, you've kept coming back and then you're totally possessing yourself.
Ooh, I'm into it.
Yeah. Wow. Now I want to go mess around with those cards. So the hypnosis snack is more like a meditation snack today. And I would invite you to go create something, go, you know, make a meal or make a, collage or go, what's it called? Decoupage or something where you get bits of newspaper.
Cover yourself really in bits of newspaper.
Yeah. Go do a tie dye. What else could you make?
I'm not good at making like material things in the world. I don't know.
Oh, I'm surprised by that. But you make outfits.
I don't think I make outfits.
Yes, you do. Are you kidding? You're always in some wild outfit.
No, I'm not. Oh yes, my God. Are. I feel like I'm definitely not. In my heyday, I feel like I was. Now I'm like
every
sporty
time
spice.
I've met you in public, you're like got a little purse that matches your lipstick and like there's something going on.
Maybe it's like innate. It's more tacit now. I used to really, it was very like hyper, Bjork.
You also make your environment. Like I feel like your home is like very defined. Like it's very clear what is where and why and like the little
All right, I guess
like
I am
colors.
Making
oh yeah. Are you kidding? I see you as like a big time maker.
I feel like I'm making so often in like the ethereal realm that it's hard sometimes. But I guess it's all like the symbols I make are very tangible.
Yeah.
It's like very material symbols. So, yeah.
You also are making writing all the time, playlists all the time. You're a writer. Yeah. I mean, you're a huge creative. I would definitely include writing in this idea of creativity.
Okay. Well, thank you for returning that to my.
Yeah, no problem.
All right. But decoupaging, I am not.
Yeah, no, we're not doing that. I mean, there's all kinds of things to
make. So many ways to make.
Yeah. So go make something and see about returning to the making as you're making. What are you doing with the moment? Are you using the moment to leave the moment? Are you using the moment to respond to the moment? Are you like partnering with the moment? Are you gathering all the moments and then blowing them up? I don't know. I would call this meditation like, I would think of it as just like an inventory, like just like see what happens, set a timer for 5 minutes. And just, this is really like, of course, most of your thoughts are not going to be on the thing that you're making, who knows what you'll end up thinking about. But I think it will be illuminating either way. I don't really know if there's more of a purpose to it than just a meditation to see where it leads you, but I'm sure something will come up.
Yeah. Making meditation. Yeah. Because I feel like, I don't know. There's so much like interesting inventory that could happen there. I feel like, and you and I have both talked about being sort of at turning points with our own creative processes. And I don't know. I don't know the last time I've actually like had some observational capacity within that. And there's something actually really present about that. I mean, I think sometimes we think about observation as removing yourself from the moment and somehow being a part. But I think there's actually like a really observational quality about being fully present as immersed. Because you're actually like looking around and you're like paying attention to like what's encircling you, rather than just sort of disappearing whole scale into it. That's cool.
That's like makes me think of the Leo Aquarius axis where it's like Leo is immersed and then Aquarius is observing and they're kind of just bouncing back and forth.
Oh.
So wild.
Yeah, I've been thinking about immersion a lot lately, like, because I feel like there's I don't know, it's been like I've been teaching this year long, you know, astrology and tarot class. And so I've been, all these symbols have been sort of coming through in real time. And I remember back in Pisces season, I was writing and talking a lot about the immersive quality of Pisces, but it's almost like Pisces is the immersion. So then it's like elsewhere, like it disappears completely into the thing. It's a kind of saturation that then like the energy is gone because it's so deep in, you know, it's that it's everywhere. But then I was thinking about immersion in Taurus and the idea of like absorption and like really steeping yourself in something. But this idea of immersion, now it's like braiding its way through the other fixed signs and through all of the signs, really. I guess there's a different, of course, as with all these topics, there's a different way of being present or immersing yourself in the moment in the style of each of the 12 signs.
I could see you writing a book called The Astrology of Immersion.
Oh, yeah. Let me add it to my list.
Yeah. I'm glad you brought up Pisces, because that was something I was really thinking about as I thought of like myself as like a kid getting so immersed and so present in the moment while reading that I was like really escaping. And that like is to me like my Neptune rising, that kind of like Pisces way of positioning yourself where you're like, I'm so in, I'm out.
Ooh, now it's making me think about like another like bonus snack could be like the, what do you call, I always forget what you call that. Oh, like whatever planet's rising in your chart.
Yeah.
Because it's almost like being taken under by that, or like maybe like allowing yourself to be immersed in that energy sometimes. Like, you know, I think about you and Neptune rising, or me and Pluto rising. Like, what does it mean to like let yourself get possessed in that energy, or self, you know, ultimately maybe self-possess that energy if we're talking about that, but like let right. like that wave kind of cover you and bring you into presence in a given moment. I don't know.
Oh, wow. This has been a rich topic.
It really has. So listeners, paw prints of nowness, possessions and self-possessions, immersions, steepings, wherever you are in your creative process of living and loving through it all, we hope that you are here and dear and near, as we're holding you here and dear and near from where we are.